thank you once again for listening to Meet the Leader. As all of you probably know by now, this is my attempt to introduce more and more of you to those that lead your local authorities up and down the country. And it's been really exciting so far. For me, I've never been a leader. I've been very close to it. I've understood it. I've seen people do it. I've seen some good examples and I've seen some bad examples. Well, one thing I do know about it is that you don't do it lightly, and it takes an incredible amount of energy and time to invest in leading a community. So for today, I'd like to introduce you to Dan Sword, who will be the elected leader of the Harlow Council as of tomorrow, Dan.
Yes, indeed. Yep.
Pretty exciting. Now, could we start off? Could you declare an interest, your age?
Yes, I'm the energetic age of 22.
Oh, if only I was 22 again. So, Dan, all my other guests up to now have been people sort of my age, in their 50s, who have been around the block and come into wanting to give up time. You're at this amazing age of discovery and being young and everything else. I'm jealous, by the way, that you're 22. Tell me, what drew you to local politics? How did you get involved?
Yeah, well, there's a few things to say off the bat, really, because I know your listeners are probably thinking, 22, what on earth are you doing? When people ask me, you remember the old Ronald Reagan TV debate where he said, I'm not going to bring my opponents usefulness and experience into this about it. So I just flip it the other way around. So that, you know, the old buggers have had their turn, let someone else have a crack. But in all seriousness, I don't come from a political family at all. My dad was a bricklayer, my mum's a school teacher, and I'm the youngest of four. None of my family are remotely interested in politics. My dad sort of reads the paper and my mum tells him to put it away type thing. And the other three siblings, you know, one's a professional rugby player, one is a life coach, and one's a midwife. So four completely different kids. But I'm the only ginger one out of the four, and was probably slightly rebellious as a result of that. And at the age, I don't know, it was probably sort of 13, 14, 15. I used to play rugby and have to travel all over the place with my dad, and used to get engrossed in long conversations in the car about politics and how crazy all these people are. And sort of really got into it from that and got interested. I mean, to really make some of your listeners feel old, I think next month we're coming up to, what is the 7th anniversary of the EU referendum?
Yeah.
And people always ask me how I vote. Well, I was not even 16 at the time of the referendum. I was just a few days shy of 16. But nevertheless, I was massively engrossed in that sort of thing. And, you know, the 2015 election and 17, 19, and followed it on from there. So when I was at college, you know, I said I was rebellious. I enjoyed myself, shall we say. But I also enjoyed playing rugby. And our rugby coach at the time, we were in our second year, and I remember sitting down with him and he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, to be honest, I don't want to go to university, but I don't know what else there is to do. You know, that's all we're told, is you need to apply on UCAS. Have you filled in your UCAS application yet? Well, I didn't even take paper and pen to college, let alone filling a UCAS application. So, everyone was piling pressure on about what you do, except my parents, I may add, because they had, you know, neither of them went to university, but the three older kids, particularly my brother, who's the oldest, I think there was a lot of pressure for him because the system sort of put this pressure on them, and that your child now can go to university, and what an amazing thing that is. So put a lot of pressure on him to go, and, you know, he had a great time, as did my other siblings, but I didn't want to go. But as I said, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So it was this rugby coach who said to me, well, actually, you don't have to go to university. There are other things you could do. And he said, well, what are you interested in? And obviously I said politics. I said, but, you know, I'm just turning 18. What on earth can I do? And he, you know, we had many chats like this. And in the end, he said, well, I found this website with all these MPs' contact details on who are offering internships or jobs or whatever. He said, you probably won't get one. He said, but why don't we just write to them all and see what they say? And actually, the first one I wrote to, I didn't write to any others in the end, I only wrote to one, which was a chap called Robert Halfen, who was a fantastic MP. He's MP for Harlow. He's now Minister for Apprenticeships, which is very fitting, because I wrote to him He was advertising a job, which I knew I'd never get. But I thought perhaps if I get the chance to meet him, he can at least give me some advice. And he wrote back and said, come in and meet me for a cup of tea. So I went in to meet him. And I left meeting, and he'd offered me an apprenticeship. And God's honest truth, I remember walking out. His office is in just below the House of Commons, just the floor below. And I walked out, the place in dire straits in terms of the building state. And I thought, what on earth am I going to do an apprenticeship in? You know, I don't want to be a plumber or an electrician or whatever. And in actual fact, the apprenticeship was in communications and so on. And I completed that apprenticeship with him, and it genuinely transformed my life. You know, I had to commute there, and he was an absolutely incredible boss, and the things he taught me and the team I worked with. Genuinely, there was nothing I could have done that would have transformed my life in the same way. I went from a pretty usual rebellious 18-year-old teenager, you know, to someone a couple of years later who had been working in Westminster in what was an absolutely fraught time in politics with Brexit and general elections and God knows what else. So I had some pretty amazing experiences in that. And I actually stayed on with him for a few more years. So, you know, done the apprenticeship, had no debt, got a job with him. And then I've sort of branched off since then. But during the 2019 election, I came to Harlow to help with his campaign, and essentially haven't left, and absolutely love the town. So in terms of how I got into the local council, I was asked to run the 2021 local election campaign, because we were in COVID and we had COVID and whatever else. And I thought, yeah, why not? You know, campaigning's my thing. I absolutely love it. It had been a Labour council for the best part of 70-odd years, as long as the town had been about, with a couple of years break in somewhere in there. And, you know, Rob had just won with a 14,000 majority. And people said to me, well, you're an optimistic young chap, Dan, but trust me, we've been around here forever. It's never going to go blue. It's a socialist town, is what one person said to me. And I remember just sitting there and thinking, well, hang on. The same town has just voted for a Tory MP with a 14,000 majority. I'm not convinced it's a socialist town, having knocked on these doors. I think what people really want is change. You know, Harlow is a new town, you know, built from scratch. Most of these people moved here or grew up here. And actually what they've seen is their town massively decline. And what they seriously want is change. And the council doesn't deliver for them. You know, I don't like the word culture, but when Harlow was built, near enough 90% of the housing was council housing. The pubs were owned by the council, the schools, everything, you know, every service was run by the council. Now, obviously, lots of those things have changed, and there's been a massive shift with Right to Buy and so on, but the council still owns over a third of the homes in the town. And so there is a real belief in Harlow that the council should be doing better. And that's absolutely what we galvanised in the election campaign. And we were a couple of candidates short, and there was the ward I now represent, Bush Fair, was the then Labour leader of the council, a chap called Mark Ingall, who was a ferocious character. And you know, the Tories had never won Bush Fair, it's impossible, so on and so forth. And as goes the usual political story, we won 12 out of the 13 seats available that night, including my one in Bush Fair. So we turned the council.
And how close were those votes? Was it, you know, you really had to work for every single vote to get that?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. I mean, there's no, you know, this was not a sort of a leafy village somewhere. This was a you know, Bush Fair is a wonderful community, very high density housing, has some of the most deprived neighbourhoods in the country. But actually, you know, I committed myself to knock on every door. I delivered at least one leaflet, if not two, a week for the 6-week campaign to every single home. And gave people the opportunity to, you know, that there was a different way forward. And actually, the town that they loved and grew up in didn't have to decline anymore. And we can change things, and we can do this better.
And that's, you know, actually, we can. And that ethos is really what drives you, isn't it? Because I saw in a lot of the press that you've done and the regeneration portfolio that you had, is that belief in you can change things and you can make it work.
Well, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, I did an event not too long ago with, they were sort of small upcoming tech SMEs. And I said to them, you know, this is where people sometimes wonder whether I am a conservative or not. But one of the things I said to them is, you are the guys that get up at 5 a.m, that scrape the ice off your car or van, go out to work, come up, you know, innovate. Because you fundamentally believe you can do something. You're the ones that remortgage your homes, that You know, do all these things, take the risk because you believe you can do it, and look at the success that can be had. Why is it that the, you know, the council or government or whatever it is can't do the same thing? Because fundamentally, you know, when I knocked on these doors, or people weren't asking for miracles. They were just saying, you know, I grew up in Harlow. The town centre used to be amazing, and now it's in dire straits. You know, my kids live in a council property that's had a leaking roof for 2 years. My, you know, whatever the case is, I used to walk out my front door and the grass was well maintained and the roads were in a decent state. And now it's appalling. You know, they're not asking for miracles, but fundamentally they're asking for change. And, you know, as you said, all the regeneration stuff, you know, so I was elected in 2021. You know, I'd never been into a council in my life at that point. I'd never even stepped foot in a council building. I didn't really know what it done. And I was made the cabinet member for regeneration simply on the basis that I said, this is a load of rubbish. We could rebuild the town centre. I don't believe all this downbeat misery. And I came into the council on my first day, and I was, you know, greeted by some wonderful officers and so on. And I remember they said to me, so what is it you want to do? And I said, well, it's quite simple, really. I said, I want to rebuild the entire town centre. I want to build lots of new homes. And I want to regenerate our neighbourhoods. And they said, oh, well, that's very admirable. There's a few problems. We don't own any of the land in the town centre. You know, council house building, it's a bit tricky with viability. We've tried it before, it didn't really work. And in terms of regenerating the estates, well, it's very complex with, you know, ownership and how you're going to fund it. So perhaps we could look at, you know, some new benches and bins. I remember coming away from that and just thinking, what on earth have I got myself into? You know, this is what, like, you know, I've got to join up this link now. I've promised people I'm going to do all these things, but I'm now sort of met with the reality of it. But actually, it was, you know, there were some fantastic officers, and I, you know, people, you know, the common perception of councils is that they're all lazy buggers and so on. But actually, there are some incredible people working in local authorities that, you know, share the same vision to change things. And In short order, actually, we'd done quite a lot. You know, when I turned up, there was no regeneration department. It was a small team as part of another department. We set up a whole new regeneration and planning department, brought in some different people to run that, and really galvanised around a vision that we were going to change things, and genuinely instilled a belief in that team that, you know, for years you've been told we can't do this. Well, actually, we can do it. And within a year, just about a year, we went from the smallest landowner in the town centre to the largest landowner in the town centre. We secured over £100 million worth of investment, £45 million of that from the government through Levelling Up Fund and Towns Fund. Another £50 million on top of that through an investment fund. We signed a development partnership with one of the biggest developers in the country. You know, we'd done some unbelievable things. We had a £46 million scheme, a private funded scheme that we worked very closely in partnership with them, receive planning permission and get underway. So in the space of a year, we absolutely changed from what for the last 25 years, you know, people were told this can't happen. We don't know the land, there's no money, et cetera, to, wow, we're rebuilding the town centre. We put in place a whole new master plan. So
can I, let's, because age is always an issue in a reverse way. So we often, older people find they get sidelined because they're older people. How do you think that the being young has been an obstacle, a challenge for you to get over when you've been working with people in the community, that they sort of sit there and go, what do you know? Because what you've just told me is a wonderful transformation story about new energy coming in. You've been incredibly generous and supportive of the officers. What was being young actually an obstacle you had to find some way of? How have you got over being young with with people who sort of looking at you going, well, what do you know?
Well, I've aged quickly, put it that way. No, it's a fair point, actually. And if you'd asked me this a year ago, I would have just bullishly said, well, it's a load of rubbish, you know, I'll get on with it sort of thing. But I've reflected on it a lot more. And, you know, to begin with, I remember when I told some, I don't know who it was, great auntie at a family party or something you see every few years. It was one of those sort of characters that I was running for a council. And she said exactly that. What do you know? I was 20 at the time. She said, what do you know about that? How are you going to help people? And I just sort of bullishly went on with it. But I have thought about it a lot more. And do you know what? I I fundamentally believe it's like all of these things, you know, if you're rich, you don't understand, or, you know, whatever the case is. I think what people really want is just someone who's going to listen to them and do what they promise. And fundamentally, most voters don't care whether you're young, old, rich, poor, whatever in between. They just want you to deliver on what matters to them. But has it been an obstacle? I'm not sure an obstacle, but it has been probably, you know, you're not trying to run around an obstacle, but the grass is certainly longer that you're running in. Because every time you walk into a room, you know, the first thing people think is, God, who's he? Yeah. You know, what does he know about this? So you probably do have to work a bit harder in that respect. But, you know, actually, I think it's the same thing when people see what you're doing. And if you do sit in that room and, you know, I remember sitting down with the developer and I could see the smirk on their face when I came in, as if to say, oh, this is going to be an easy ride. He doesn't have a clue what he's on about. And I completely turned their application on its head and their views. And, you know, they walked out thinking, Christ, if, you know, perhaps we shouldn't have taken it for granted. It's, you know, if you work extremely hard, know what you're doing, why should age be a barrier? You know, someone stopped me in the street the other day and they said, oh, it's great, you know, we really like you, but aren't you a bit young? And I said, so if I was 60 and rubbish at the job, would that be all right?
Well, actually, Dan, a long time ago, there was some great work done in Fenland District Council about how councils operated and getting rid of silos and everything. And I was really excited about it. So just to tell you this story to make you smile, I expected to walk into meeting a leader and a deputy leader who were young, been to MBAs. You know, they were just really breaking all the rules and everything else. And I remember the door to the council offices opened by a lovely man who was incredibly dapper in his 70s. So age works in different directions in different ways. So now coming tomorrow night, full council. Yep. I love the full council. I think it's a real moment for people to remember why they're there. And the fact is that the council is the people, are the people in the room, not the building. You're going to be elected to what I'm sure will be one of the great honours of your life, to be the leader of Harlow. From what you've learnt and where you've come from, looking forward now to taking what you've done in the regeneration market and looking at all of what the council has to offer, what do you see ahead of you?
Yeah, well, the first thing to say is, as you say, well, you know, politicians always say it's been, you know, the greatest honour or whatever, but and I try and avoid using those sort of cliches as much as possible. But to be honest, unless you have done the role, you will never quite understand the honour it is, because, you know, fundamentally, we have our council offices actually look right over about half of the town. You can see about half of the town from our offices. Mm. So, you know, every single day you look out the window and think, that's what we're here for. And that's what we're here to change. And, you know, it's always the case with this sort of full council that's coming up. Well, all the politicians in the room have just been on the campaign trail knocking on people's doors for however many weeks and months. So, you know, most of them are very enthused about changing things, but we have an enormous task in terms of what needs change. Because as I said, Harlow's a new town. It's now just had its 75th birthday. Everything was built 75 years ago, you know, with precast concrete and so on, and everything is falling apart at the same time. And, you know, there is an enormous task to sort a lot of that out. We've got to transform council services. We've got an enormous task ahead in terms of, you know, I said the council has about a third of the homes in the town, an enormous amount of them have an outstanding repair on. The town is looking tired and we've got to match up. You know, how do you, I spoke about the regeneration, build a brand new town centre and people are living in homes with damp and mould and leaking roofs. Mm. They're the sort of thing that is, it is when you come out of your sort of portfolio, however great that may be, and become the leader, everything stops with you. Yes. And I said to people the other day, I was chatting to them about this, and I said, well, you know, fundamentally, I am the responsible one. And I spoke about officers earlier, and it's always an interesting thing. And probably, you know, people in local government, or if you haven't been a councillor or whatever, or even many councillors, it's can't quite understand the relationship between officers and councillors often.
And very few people understand that relationship.
I've had varying views. You know, it's in the national media a lot at the moment with civil servants and ministers and whatever. I won't hide from the fact there is some sort of local government inertia in these things. But actually, if you break that and show people what we can do, more often than not, you will find those people want to come with you. You know, people don't sit in an office thinking, I'm going to make this as slow as I possibly can. But it may be that it needs an injection of energy and a new way of thinking. And that is one of the biggest tasks we have. But actually, if you see it as a genuine partnership, if you see it as a genuine partnership between the two groups and they act as one, because fundamentally we are here, all of us, just to make this a better place to live and work and start a business and whatever, you will achieve a damn sight more. But the only caveat to that, which I never tire of saying to our counsellors, is we are the accountable ones. Mm-hmm. We are the ones that have to knock on the doors, that have to take responsibility, that have to apologise to people when we get things wrong. We are the ones that make the decisions. And therefore, that does come with great weight. When we're, as I said, all the challenges we've got, Harlow's a town of nearly 100,000 people. We're built on the outskirts. Harlow's going to be another 25,000 homes built. Over the next 10 years, the town is essentially going to grow by over 50%. Yeah, it's enormous. I think we've got a new hospital being built, the UK Health Security Agency moving here, Harlow Gilston Garden Town. There's enormous investment coming in. But that's all the shiny stuff, as it were. That doesn't get away from the day-to-day challenges, as I said, with housing and health and antisocial behaviour and all those things. And yeah, that, you know, that is a great weight to have on your shoulders, as it would be for anyone who took on the role, no matter how old they are.
Looking after groups, we're talking about the relationship between officers and members, and it's almost like an airlock between the two. You're not there to do their job, they're not there to do your job, but you work together. And the stronger that is, the more successful, I think, councils can be. But there's also this wonderful thing about groups. And I remember a couple of years ago, Sir Richard Leese stood down after 25 years in Manchester. And I was very smug with myself because I said, well, congratulations on managing your group for 25 years. And he rewarded me with a big belly laugh of, you noticed. And groups are interesting, aren't they? Because let's talk about your group. I remember when I was a councillor, I actually thought one of our group slept through most of the group meetings until I suggested closing a library, and then he woke up and ripped my head off at 85. The whole group dynamic and everything else, how do you think that you've got a good majority? Do you think your group are up for taking some of the big decisions that you're going to drive them towards?
Yeah, some people say it's one of the wonderful things about British democracy, and it's the same thing in Parliament with backbench MPs and so on. It's an interesting system, and if you would start with a blank sheet of paper, is that what you'd draw up? I'm not sure. I look at some of the success, particularly in areas that need massive regeneration, because you say it's big decisions and you need to make them fast and get on with things. Some of the areas like Teesside, I'm a huge fan of Ben Houchen and what he's achieved up there. And, you know, would you be able to do that in the same system? I'm not sure. You know, that's where I think mayoralty is a great success. But you play the hand of cards you've been dealt. And we do have a fantastic group. We've got some amazing councillors. And fundamentally, what unites us all is that we want to change things. Mm. We do want to make it a better place to live. And people may have different views on how you do that or how you go about it, but fundamentally, we're united in that. And, you know, next May 2024, we have an all-up election.
Wow.
We've seriously got to show people in the next 12 months that things have changed. By that point, we would have been in for 3 years. And that's probably about the point where people say, well, it's no longer the other guy's fault anymore. You've been in for 3 years. Why haven't you done anything about it? So I think, no, we are absolutely united in that. And I've set out very clearly what our agenda is, what our mission is, and everyone is signed up to that.
Now, Dan, all of what we've talked about has just been brilliant, and I've really enjoyed the conversation. Let's go back, because I'm going to be ages now. When you go out, you're going to watch rugby, aren't you? You're still having a life. Yeah. You're still making the most of the world that's around you.
Yeah.
Promise?
Somewhat. it's all part of the job. You know, the social event for me is at Harlow Rugby Club, who are a fantastic club who have been promoted this year. But that's you know, something I enjoy doing the most. I go down there, I have a laugh and I'm social, but I'll still get a tap on the shoulder from someone who has an issue. But that's what you sign up for. That's what I enjoy doing.
Brilliant. Look, it's been fantastic to meet you and talk to you. And you have added again to this series really brilliantly for me. You have some really wonderful, the listen and deliver is the simplest way to describe exactly what it's all about. And I really hope that you're able to pull all the things together. It's really interesting about the new towns. And you might want to get hold of Paul, who was the leader of Bracknell until recently.
He's an incredible guy.
Incredible man. And he took 20 years to knock down his town centre.
Yep.
But one of the things he did do, which I thought was really cool, was that they kept part of the town centre and refurbished it rather than demolished it. Because what they didn't want was to create another town centre that would be demolished.
Exactly that.
And that it could age in its own speed.
One of the first visits we made was to Bracknell to see Paul, and he was actually one of the biggest inspirations for what we've done.
Yeah.
And how we've gone about it. Incredible, man. I'm so sorry to see the result down there, because actually my godparents live in Bracknell, and I remember what Bracknell was like 15 years ago and what their town centre was like. And it's not just what he's done with the town centre, the whole of Bracknell has been transformed, but he is a living embodiment of what local government should be about.
Well, and I think that you can quite easily take that mantle on. I wish you well, and I thank you for coming on and just sharing just a snippet of what makes you a leader. I wish you well tomorrow night, and I look forward to keeping up with your progress in the coming weeks and months. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
So that's my latest Meet the Leader, Dan Sword, an incredible young man who has all the confidence and vision of someone of much older years. But then why shouldn't he? We're a world of aspiration, and so often younger people feel disenfranchised by the politics around them. And there is a young man at the heart of the politics for his community. So with that, I end this episode of Meet the Leader. Thank you for joining.